Folks, I am really excited to talk about our newest sponsor for the coaching staff, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, also All-American Used Cars and Trucks. Two really, really good businesses. I'm going to start with Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust. You know, it's hard to find a good mechanic. It's hard to find somebody that you trust. And, you know, long before this situation came about, we had been taking our cars to Ruiz for a year, year and a half, and they've done great, great work. They're honest. They're upfront. They can do everything. They, you know, take care of your motor, take care of your brakes, tires, oil, so simple stuff like oil changes, brake pads, mufflers, whatever you may need. Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust are going to take care of it for you. If you are in the Omaha area and you are looking for a quality, reasonably priced, customer-friendly situation, you're not going to regret giving Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust a chance here. They are located at 4839 North 90th Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68134. You could give Esmeralda a call up there. Her number is 402-317-2572. And they'll get you taken care of. I'm saying this as a customer. We literally do not bring our cars anywhere other than Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust for anything that we do from this point for the last year or two. So again, another business here, All American Used Cars or Trucks. If you're in the market for a used car or truck, go check out Juan Carlos's business there. 144th and I-80, 14706 Schooner Road here in Omaha. Go check it out here. If you're looking to exchange a car, buy, sell, trade, whatever it may be, you're going to get an honest deal from honest people. So go check out Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust and All American Used Cars and Trucks. Good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, the weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. We are off on the right track this Friday, or no, it's not Friday, it's Thursday. This is coming out on Friday, and it is the coaching staff episode number 104, sponsored by Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, and also All American Used Cars and Trucks. This weekend, there's a big deal out at Used Cars and Trucks, 144th and I-80, if you're in the Omaha area, big social events, some food, dancing, all sorts of different things. So go check it out there. I put something up on Twitter. So if you just happen to be in the market, I think it's going to be like our last nice day, super nice day, like a summer-like day. Everything is kind of taking a turn between Saturday and Sunday here. So go check it out there. Use All American Used Cars and Trucks, 144th and I-80. Before we get to that, or after that, we've done that. We've taken care of that. We are back on track. Second reference. Tony Viss is on the other side of the line in the Cedar Valley. Mr. Viss, how are things for you this fine Thursday afternoon?
Well, Marty, we're in the 80s. It is October 10th, last time I checked, and doing well. Just wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to get some rain, but at the same time, just enjoying ourselves here in the big CR. How is the weather, and are you doing in the big O?
It's very similar. It's been a really busy week. Last weekend I was at the USA Basketball Academy in Kansas City. Got a lot of great stuff, listeners. It's been a crazy week teaching wise. I am going to take all of that stuff and put it together and put it up on the website, and I'll take the link and put it out on the Twitter machine. So a lot of really, really good stuff. Got to meet one of the guys I really, really admire, Kevin Eastman, for a few minutes. Got to meet some folks that I've had on the pod that I've never met in person, like Jeff Schertz and Greg White. Of course, Coach Showalter was there, Raz Vanderloo, my guy Clint Hunter at USA Basketball. So it was a really, really good weekend, Tony. Really enjoyed it.
Good. I saw a few things on Twitter, and looked like it was a good time there with a great plethora of good speakers there.
Yes, a plethora of them is a great word, plethora. So speaking of a plethora, I've got a plethora of number fours for you here, Tony. I've got a quarterback, I've got a first baseman, 2 second basemen, and a couple of basketball players for you here.
Well, let's get the quarterback out of the way because that's Brett Favre.
Brett Favre. Yep.
Okay. One of the basketball players beat Michael Finley.
I did not have Michael Finley on the list.
Huh. We're going to have to have a talk about this list. So you said some second basemen?
Couple second basemen. One started out as a catcher and then went to second base to extend his career, and the other one started out at second base and became a designated hitter to extend his career. Both of them are in the Hall of Fame.
Ooh. Man. That's a stumper then.
One spent the majority of his career as a beer maker before he became a birdie and an identical twin.
Tommy Herr?
Not Tommy Herr. No, he was 28.
What a jerk. Sorry. Divisible by four.
I was aware there would be no math.
You said there was no math.
You said there was no math.
Oh, man.
Next thing you know, I'll be fact checking you.
Thanks. Thanks, 60 Minutes. That's also the subplot for. crap.
Need a little help?
Yeah, a lot of help.
Paul Molitor.
Okay. I've already got that.
And Craig Biggio.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Craig Biggio.
There's one more baseball player, first baseman. Far and away, the way more famous, way more significant than those two guys in the history of baseball. One of the greats.
Lou Gehrig.
There it is. All right. Two basketball guys with the uniform number four.
Not Michael Finley. No. Let's see. Number four basketball. I am drawing a blank. It's a bad day.
One of them may have thought that five was much more fabulous.
Chris Webber.
There you go. And the unsung hero of the Bad Boy Pistons.
Joe Dumars.
There it is. There it is. You got it. So, not without a little help, but hey, we got there. That's all that matters.
Hey,
that's all that matters. So,
teammates.
Exactly. So, speaking of teammates, great teammates get their teammates off to a great start in every practice, and coaches, a big responsibility for you as you're putting together your practice plan is to have great drills to start out your practice. Sometimes the first drill or two of practice can really make or break, in some cases, the vibe, the flow of the early part of practice, if not maybe the entire practice. And so Tony and I, again, as you folks are putting together your practice plans and thinking about the beginning of your season, the importance. I always thought, Tony, I was always really, really concerned about getting practice off to a good start. Those first 15 to 20 minutes are so very, very important.
100% agree. One of the things I did, we had conferences, I think, Tuesday night this week, and I had a whopping two conferences set up.
You're just that good of a teacher, you know.
I had some free time on my hands, and I was like, hey, what could I do that would make this worthwhile? So I designed the first 10 practices because that's about 5 weeks around the corner, and I wanted to do a few other things with basketball as well. And so I thought if I could knock the practices out, it would just kind of like domino set the other things up. And so spent a lot of time thinking through the beginning of practice, because again, it was kind of like a relay, you know, your initial leg of a relay where you want to get off to a really, really good start. And so I 100% agree with you that these early drills, I wouldn't say can make or break, but they can definitely set the tone and put you on the right path that you want to be on.
Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, it's consistent. You know, you don't want to waste any time is another big part of it, in my opinion, Tony. And I really feel like, you know, if you're wasting time, if you're not sharp from the get-go. That kind of gives your kids a little bit of permission to not be as sharp as they as you would want them to be, so your team can continue to progress on a daily basis to get 1% better. And I think before we even start talking about drills, I thought maybe I would touch on this. And I know a lot of coaches do this. Almost all coaches do this. A short meeting before you even get everything started. Now, does this need to be a 12-minute soliloquy? Absolutely not. You want to keep it really, really short and sweet. Here's maybe a couple of announcements. Like a lot of times, be like, okay, hey, tomorrow, reminder, it's the day before we play West High. We're meeting in my classroom at 3:25, scouting report. Bus is leaving at 4:30 on Friday. Make sure we're ready to go there. You need to be back at school by 4:15, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, real short, sweet, quick on, you know, what's our goal here today? What do we need to do? What do we need to improve upon? Early in the season, we would often do something like a little team bonding type of a thing. Hero hardship highlight. What are some things that you might not know about me? Different things like that to start the season out and kind of go around the full circle of your team, assistant coaches, managers included in all of that. That always seemed to set a good tone for the season as well, that we're not just here about basketball. We're here to be as close of a group as we could possibly be. And so I think having a well thought out, concise, quick meeting before the start of practice. A lot of teams, they circle up around the center circle. You know, pre-COVID, we did a lot of hand holding, that type of thing, just to feel close to one another. You know, when I was at a private school, when I was at a religious school, we were, it was definitely encouraged to start practice with prayer, which is what we did a lot of the time, or, you know, pretty much every time, you know, so different things like that. I think that's it. That helps get everything off in the right direction before you even jump into the drills. What's your thoughts, Tony?
Yeah, I think, like you said, just something quick, 3 to 5 minutes, you know, as far as talking about those things that you want to highlight, what's the theme of practice, where's the early focus on in terms of things. Maybe I know some like to hit a quick quote and then what does that mean and get the feedback from the players and stuff like that. And I think all those things are very, very important. But you just want to make sure, you know, like you said, you set the tone, you set the mood, you set the vibe, whatever, and then, you know, you're ready to go.
Mm-hmm. So I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Big things, you know, and if I had 50 practices, I might have started it 50 different ways, but these were some pretty consistent drills that I started my practices with. Tony, I'll let you lead off. What's a good practice drill that you have to start out your practice?
Yeah, you know, one thing that really helped me, I had an assistant coach when I was in Harlan towards the end. His name was Steve Brand, and Steve had been a head coach previously in a small town in Iowa, Guthrie Center, had led them to the state tournament, and then had come to Harlan for a few years and was an assistant coach on our staff. And it was really, really awesome to have him. And I remember the first year that we were together, I had expressed some frustrations early on in practice about we never just seemed to be focused and ready to go from the beginning. And one of the things that he helped me with was he started introducing me to like a dynamic warm-up, you know, some of the plyometric stuff. He's like, Tony, you know, for the first 5, 10 minutes, some of them might not have seen each other during the day and they want to talk. And so this is a way to do some of those things, allow them to talk a little bit, make sure as they're going across court or down the court, whatever, and doing their plyos, that they can have that opportunity. And we don't do it all the time. We don't start every practice with plyos, but I would say probably at least 75% of practice, we start with plyometrics. And it really has helped a ton. It gives them a chance to, you know, visit a little bit. It gives them a chance to get stretched out and warmed up, and then we can go into whatever drill we want after that. And we don't nearly have the mistakes being made and my blood pressure and frustration level, you know, going up off the chart. And so that's one that I've been really fortunate to learn from him, some of these different plyometric exercises and things like that that have really helped our teams out a ton, I believe.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of that. I never really did that, but I definitely see the point of it. You know, one of the things, talking about adjustments and something to think about, if I ever got back into it again, that would definitely be something to consider. Another thing that I would think about, and I would really think heavily about doing this, is doing an organized form shooting session every day for 5, 7, 10 minutes. Doug Woodard was telling me about what he used to do at Bellevue West, and obviously Doug has had tremendous success with his program, and that would just be something that I would, if I was talking about a unified day in, day out, like a dynamic warm up. If I had it to do over again, I'm not saying I'm 100% sold on it, but I'm like 87.9% sold on
that's
doing
pretty precise.
That's pretty precise. Kind of like what I said, 6 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm pretty precise when it comes to those things, but you know, that's something that I would really, really heavily think about. And what's the best thing that you liked about that, or what do you like about that dynamic warm-up? Is just the unity of it all and everybody's on the same page? They know what to expect every day? Is that the...
Dude, I like the unity of it. I like the fact, to be honest with you, it gave them time to talk with each other and to build relationship with each other. I like that side of it. And the other thing too, you know, I think a lot of times in basketball, we really underestimate the importance of footwork. And some of these things with the dynamic stuff, you know, we would do with their feet and different things like that, kind of warm up their feet and stuff. And it just, I don't know, it was really, really good from that standpoint. And I really think our footwork improved. And it didn't seem like we traveled as much. And some of the moves that we would do in the post, the up and unders and the step throughs and things like that, really also seemed to benefit from it as well. And so I don't know, I really bought into it. Like I said, we probably do it 70, 75%. That is our opening drill of practice.
Okay. In 1993, Counting Crows referred to Omaha as somewhere in Middle America. More people know Omaha as the home of Warren Buffett, the Union Pacific Railroad, and the College World Series. Athletically, Nebraska is known for its dominance in college and high school football and volleyball, while basketball has perennially been on the back burner. But for one season, in its largest city, basketball was king of the state. In a time of social and political turmoil in our country, three high school boys basketball teams from Omaha, Nebraska were ranked in the top 25 in the country, featuring some of the best talent that one city has ever produced anywhere in the country. Amongst these three teams were 9 Division I basketball players, and all 15 starters from these three teams played collegiate athletics at various levels for at least 2 seasons. Kings of their court, 3 teams, 1 city, and the greatest basketball season in Nebraska high school history begins with the chaotic ending of the 2020 state tournament as the whole world was shutting down due to the COVID-19 virus. Over the span of the next year, these players, coaches, and parents navigated their basketball futures while also, like the rest of the United States and the world, worked through COVID quarantines, the George Floyd murders and riots, the political turmoil of the 2020 presidential campaign, and much more. 1 year later, the destinies of these three teams would intertwine themselves for the final time at the 2021 Nebraska State Basketball Tournament, where the crescendo to this story occurred 365 days after it began, with some of the best high school basketball any state has ever seen. Kings of their court, 3 teams, 1 city, and the greatest basketball season in Nebraska high school history is the story of highly driven individuals searching to achieve lifelong dreams and aspirations, both on and off the basketball floor, during a season that almost didn't happen. Kings of Their Court will be published on October the 1st, Tuesday, October the 1st. Kindle copies are $9.99. Paperback copies are $19.99. Copies are eligible to be pre-ordered today, so be sure to get on Amazon.com and pre-order your copy of Kings of Their Court. One of the drills that I really like to do in practice to start everything out, we did it. It was called, and if anybody, Tony, I'm sure you're the same way. If anybody wants to know any of these drills that we'll go through, just reach out to you, I assume.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is nothing rocket science-y.
Yep. We did a drill called 5-minute shooting, and it was great because it got our blood flowing. It was shooting, which obviously you need to be able to shoot the ball well if you're going to be successful. It was competitive. It was a unifying thing. It wasn't an individual thing. So we went for 5 minutes, real stunning there. We did like it wasn't 3-man weave, but it was like a 3-man weave type of a thing, and we would go down. And it would involve 3 basketballs. shoot layups for a minute, and everybody would shoot a layup, and I would tell them to go full speed, and if the ball got knocked out, but it looked like it was going in, I would rather have them go full speed and have the ball knocked out. We'll count it if it was going to go in, rather than slowing down, waiting for everybody to go, and then putting it up there. I wanted them to go full speed with it. We would do that for a minute, and then we would do the same thing, but the wings would shoot jump shots, and the middle person would still shoot a layup for a minute. And then we had a drill we called three-line shooting, and they had to make five right in front of the rim, five set shots from 15 feet. Then they'd go back to the three-point line. As a team, they would make five going to the right, then five going to the left. And then for the remainder of that two-minute session, they would shoot threes, and that's where the real money was made. And we would keep track of the total points for the whole 4 minutes. And then in the last minute, they would have to each grab their own basketball, find a free throw line. And we would say, okay, today you got to make three free throws in the last minute, or let's push it today. We want you to make four free throws in the last minute or whatever. But that was a great drill to get our blood flowing. It was a competitive drill, but it was a team drill. There was not a whole lot of individuality behind it. If you weren't ready to play, the biggest thing was if the kids weren't ready to go, Tony, they stuck out like a sore thumb. And as a coach, it was either a great building block, hey, great energy, hey, here we go, or hey, it was a very easy way within 5 minutes of practice. You could kind of tell whether or not you were ready to go or not. So that was one of my favorite ones to start practice.
Yeah, I think shooting is one of those things that's important to start. John starts, I would say, maybe all, if not all, definitely 90% of his practices with a variety of shooting. He starts off with some form shooting and some partner shooting, and we incorporate that as well, because one of the things I want to make sure that happens is when they're done with me, they're in a good position as they head to him. And so we would do things as well similar to that. And then another one we would like to do, just to kind of mix it up so it wasn't the same shooting drill all the time, we started off with some Lycan, and then I would do what are called Nash free throws, where for 30 seconds, you would have, you know, two other people with you at your hoop, and they would just feed you basketballs, and you wouldn't, you know, do your little routine thing. You would just catch and shoot it from the free throw line. And I thought that one was really good as well. And I try to remember the other thing we incorporated with that one also, but it took about 10 minutes and you're in a group of like three. And so we got a lot of shots up in a short amount of time. And then, like you said, I like those as well. It just kind of showed you who's ready to go. Mm-hmm. But it also works on something that I think they consider to be the most important part of the game, and that's knocking down shots.
Mm-hmm. Another one we would do, Tony, is we just called it our cycle drills. It was kind of the Paul Westhead, Loyola, one mm-hmm. gets it on the right side every time, kicks it up to the two, back to the one. And then we, you know, run 2.5 cycles, either with layups, with jump shots, with different secondary options. Again, blood is flowing. We got to make shots. Especially once we'd kind of figured things out after a week or so of practice, okay, we're going to put a time up. You got to get this amount of makes in this amount of time, different things like that. Again, one of my big emphasis, and this will probably be a pretty big theme throughout this week's podcast, I wanted to get them concentrating as soon as possible. I wanted to know as soon as possible in practice, are we really ready to go here? Are we really ready to play? Are we really ready, most importantly, to get better today? And that was another way, again, team-oriented thing. We weren't picking on Mary or Julie or Stacy or whatever. It was just Fort Calhoun or Scott Catholic. That's who we're addressing here. And it was pretty quick and easy to figure out pretty, you know, early on, hey, we really got it today. We're really sharp, something to build on. Or hey, come on now. Hey, let's get going here. We can tell right now. Let's get mentally engaged here. And so those full court things, it might be a little chaotic, but it also teaches your kids, when that opening tap goes up on Friday night, we got to be ready to go. There's no 2-minute warm-up that East High is going to give us. We got to be ready to go. So that was part of my philosophy as well. So that's another one that I liked, was doing cycle drills.
Yeah, the transition stuff is very important. We did one we called five-star. So you have five players. Each one's going to get to shoot a shot in our transition game. They all end up surprisingly being layups, but we would do a variety of things where we would start off, let them warm up the first round, Second round, everybody had 5 pushups for every missed layup. In the third round, we called it the speed round. Whichever group got the fastest time, watch the other groups. And depending upon if they beat you by, you know, a second or 2 seconds or whatever, that was how many down and backs you had. Mm-hmm. And so we just tried to make it super competitive. Then we had another one we called 6-spot layups. You had 6 spots. So you had 2 passing lines on each side. And you had the 2 people shooting the ball, put 2 minutes on the clock. And we start off early in the year. It's 30 made layups in 2 minutes. Both right side and left side. And then as the year progressed, I think we ended up getting to like 36 was the goal in 2 minutes. And so you can't miss many layups and you got to fly.
Yep. Another one we did, again, team-oriented shooting. Great way to start. We called it 6-basket, 6-cone shooting. And we used the 6 baskets. We set up 6 cones. Usually the kids were in groups of 3 or 4. And we would, most of the time, we would try to divide them up pretty evenly. You know, our 6 best shooters would lead the group, next group of six, you know, whatever. And so we would try to have the teams even. And we go around. It's competitive. Whichever group, you know, get 1 minute per basket. Usually we'd have like a left-handed layup. We'd have top of the key 3, you know, and just place them in various different spots. And again, really good way to get things started in practice. How locked in are we? Are we ready to go? You know, again, just, and you never go wrong with shooting. One of my big things as I became more seasoned and experienced, especially when I was at Fort Calhoun, we wanted to average each player, we wanted to try and get 250 shots a practice. That was our goal. Well, the only way you get 250 shots a practice is by getting up 250 shots per practice. And you got to find ways to get a lot of shooting in, because our mutual friend, Bill Finley, doesn't matter what you run. If you can't make the shot at the end of it, it doesn't matter. And so we really, really emphasized that a lot. And I really, that was another good shooting drill that we did there.
You know, another one that's I think you can do early on in practice too, that will help if you want to give them a chance to kind of get warmed up before you start, you know, statting and charting things, is some passing drills. And we would do 4 corner passing, basically pass to your right, get it back in the middle, pass straight ahead and go to the back of the line that's diagonal from you. And we would start off with 2 basketballs, then build it to 4 basketballs. We did some star passing drills. And again, you're working on making an accurate pass. You're working on hitting somebody on the move, and you're working on making sure that you catch the ball. I think those are all very, very important things. And early on in practice, you know, when, like I said, before you kind of get to where you want to chart things shooting wise and stuff like that, that's not a bad warm up to get the blood flowing and get them up and down and make them think a little bit and pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of our favorite series of practices of fundamental drills was we called it Nova Rips, and it was a series of just simple ball handling things. Again, you know, if you didn't want to make it quite as competitive or as intense, so to speak, that day, we really liked it. First thing we did, we started out in 4 lines. And we would you just catch and rip and square up, just catch and rip and square up. And we would do that. And again, if folks want these, you know, I've got them somewhere, you know, I'll give them to you with no problem. Then it was catch and rip and 2 hard dribbles to the baseline and get squared up again, play off of 2 feet. Then we'd go catch, rip, attack the middle, what we called Manhattan, and play off of 2 feet and without shooting. None of this has any shooting yet. And then we would go, we'd get to Manhattan and we would just say, hey, tornado. We just say, you know, a lot of people call them rondos, just different things like that, where we would just get up and under, you know, work on floaters, different things like that. And then we would start working on like crackbacks and movement. So those first four, we would do that for about 3 to 3.5 minutes. And then we'd start doing crackback stuff, where we would start, you know, drive to the middle, the person that passed it, they would crack back to the baseline and we'd kick it out to them. Or we'd drive baseline and crack back and do different movements off of that. But we would do that. It would, you know, after the first couple of weeks of practice and the kids really, really get it, especially our newcomers, that was about a 6-minute drill that we just covered everything had to deal with finding the rim, catching the ball, ripping it through, and then making a decision after we were playing off of 2 feet. So obviously, like everybody else, you copy what Villanova did for a while there because, I don't know, it made sense. So we called it Nova Rips, and it was a really, really good fundamental drill for us. And we used that a lot to start practices, or at the least really, really early in practices, to emphasize our footwork and squaring up.
I like a lot of what you're talking about, Marty, and I think those are underutilized things, you know, playing off of 2 feet, jump stopping, pivoting, whether it's a front pivot or a reverse pivot, you know, pass fake, and different things that I think are so undervalued and underutilized in basketball today. And like you said, you're not talking about something that's going to take 15 to 20 minutes. This is going to take a handful of minutes, and these are skills that really, really need emphasizing. You go through, I mean, obviously you mentioned Villanova under Jay Wright. They seem to have a little bit of success doing these things, and you know, you take a look at those guys that they had success with, you know, DiVincenzo and Brunson and Bridges and guys like that, Hart, that are still in the NBA today because they're very, very fundamental and they were taught the Villanova way, if you will.
Yep. I've got three more here, Tony.
Okay. You want to go, or you want me to do one more?
Go ahead. But how many do you got left?
I got one or two, I think.
Okay.
Here.
Okay.
You know, one that I really like a lot that we would do. We had something that we would call basically quick strike. And okay. So a lot of times, you know, you want to save your scrimmaging to the end of practice. And I understand that. And we do very, very similar stuff to that. But one of the things that we like to do in the beginning was this drill called quick strike. And what's going to happen in quick strike is you can put however much time you want up there. A lot of times I would just start counting down. And excuse me, wherever you scored the basketball at, that's how many points you got. So in other words, if you come down and try to run offense and string 7, 8, 9 passes together, when we would put it at like 15 seconds, 15, 14. And so you're going to get, you know, not very many points. But if you can push the ball down the floor, get out and transition and score, you know, with 10, 11 seconds left on the shot clock, so to speak, that's how many points you got. And it's just a really, really good way early on in practice to get them up and down the floor. And they really liked it a lot because, you know, it wasn't a lot of offensive execution to having to remember the plays right out of the gate. You just got to learn how to play. You don't have to run plays. You have to learn how to play. And so that was one I really, really liked to begin practice with every once in a while. And we would, it might not be the very first drill we did, but we would get it in early. And the guys, that's one of their favorite ones that they really like to do a lot.
You know, you brought up scrimmaging, Tony. And I don't think every once in a while, especially maybe like when you get into January, you know, maybe one quick warm-up drill like a Nova Rip or whatever, mm-hmm. and then you implement one of your transition drills or just a, hey, 2-minute scrimmage. You know, we're going to, you know, whoever wins the most possessions in 2 minutes here, that's who wins this or whatever it may be. But it's okay, especially after you get into the season for a while, to change some things up, to scrimmage early on in practice and to start out to catch it. Now, if you do it every day, it's not going to be effective. It's not going to work. But if you do that twice a year, that's going to be really effective for you. It's got a chance to be really effective for you, Tony. I don't know how you feel about that, but we would do that probably a couple of times a year. Would be like, okay, let's do Nova Rips. And then, bam, let's jump into one of our scrimmage drills, whether it's call the name transition or score, stop, score, or stop, score, stop, or whatever it may be. I think that's a really good way to get you going early on in practice as well.
Yeah, we would do what you're talking about, that score, stop, score. And if you won all three parts of it, we call it a turkey, and uh-huh. you would get 3 points, and we would play to 7. That's a really good one. And then another one we would do from time to time is we would do like 3 4-minute scrimmages, literally that was going to run for 4 minutes, and we would switch things up between the three scrimmages. But I think those are all good things to do early on. You know, it doesn't have to be the very first thing, but it can be one of those early things, and it might be something, like you mentioned earlier, Marty, that really sets the tone for you.
Mm-hmm. I've got two more, Tony, but they're both kind of related to one another.
Okay.
Are you done? Are you tapped out?
I've got one more, and then I'm out.
Okay. You know, we're both Snow Valley guys. You probably know where I'm going with this. Box drills and line drills. You know, you're working on footwork. You're working on Squaring up, you know, box drills are great ways to work, again, kind of a Nova Rips type of a situation where you're catching it, you're ripping, you're squaring up, you're attacking the basket. You can go through a lot of reps in your box drills in 5 or 6 minutes. And so, like, if you did a Nova Rips one day and then a box drills the next day, man, you know, that footwork and winning the battle of the footwork, that's going to be a great way to do that. And the one thing I like about the box drills, you're squaring up and you're finding the basket. That was one of my things as I reevaluated during my sabbatical between Scott and Fort Calhoun. We needed to have every drill, if possible, where we catch it and we square up and we find the rim. Find the rim. You know, I was always preaching find the rim, but then I started looking at my drills. I'm like, well, we're not really finding the rim on this drill. We're not really, you know. So what are we doing to find the rim every time we catch it, especially when you're coaching younger players? And, you know, a lot of times girls tend to, I just need to protect the ball. And so I'm going to kind of stick my butt out and do this or that. No, catch, rip, get your elbows out, find the rim every single time. And so box drills, a big one. I like both box drills and line drills, but I like box drills more than I like line drills, just for that one reason, that we're catching and we're ripping and we're finding the rim every single time if you're doing box drills correctly. But box drills and line drills from Snow Valley Basketball School, can't go wrong.
Yeah, I mean, when I switched over to coaching with John a handful of years ago, he would talk about the fact that, hey, we travel a lot. And so we began to work quite a bit on the box drills, and knew that I had worked Snow Valley and different things. And so I feel like, you know, knock on wood, that we haven't traveled nearly as often the last handful of years as they did, you know, previously. And so that's a big one. And then kind of took a little bit of where I was headed with my last one with that ball handling thing. And that kind of goes to your line drills, you know, with dribble out with your right hand, jump, stop, pivot, all that stuff. And then we do a lot of two ball dribbling drills. So a lot of ball handling drills early on too, just to work on that handle, whether it's a spin dribble series or whatever it may be, but you can kind of vary that as you go. And those are all really, really good things to do early on in a practice as well, just to kind of warm up that handle so that when you scrimmage later and do some of those drills, that they're sharp and ready to go.
Mm-hmm. Anything else on free practice or early practices, drills to start practice? Any other words of wisdom, pearls of wisdom, Tony?
You know, I think there's those days that you want to ease into it a little bit, but I'm kind of in the same boat as you, Marty. When we get in there, you know, I understand the whole dynamic stuff, and we do that, and that kind of allows them, you know, we start off with 10 minutes at the beginning of the year, but once they kind of figure out our stuff as far as this is what we mean when we say, you know, lunges and you know, bird bath and whatever different terminology that we have, we'll knock her down to 8. And then eventually by the end of the year, it's down to about 5-6 minutes with our early plyos. But once you get out of that, we tend to get after it pretty hard. And I think that's the thing that you're trying to teach your team right out of the gate is, you know, you want to be the aggressor. You want to get after it. You can't necessarily win the game in the first few minutes, but you can definitely lose it.
Yeah. Yeah. Coaches are absolutely loving our Taking Over a New Program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. A Pen and a Napkin University videos are just another way that a pen and a napkin can help you become a better coach. Our university video library is constantly expanding, with topics ranging from interviewing for a job to full court defense to 25 universal truths about coaching. Our university videos will help you round out your skill set as a coach and help you hone your craft. Videos are $10 a piece, with bundling options available. To order, you can DM me on Twitter, send me an email at apenandanapkin@gmail.com, or order from our website, apenandanapkin.com. Be sure to check out the A Pen and a Napkin video library. Well, you never see this group of people ever lose it in the first 5 minutes of the game. Tony, do you know who I am talking about?
You're right.
It is the European Rockers. Tony, last night I don't know how I stumbled into this, but I went on a 38 special kick last night.
You were holding on loosely?
I was, and I was trying not to let go. But I got so caught up in you. I went down a half hour rabbit hole of 38 special, and it was awesome. It was absolutely awesome. So, but we're not here to talk about 38 special. We're not here to talk about Europe. We are here to talk about trivia. And Tony, it is your turn for trivia.
All righty. We have a new WNBA franchise going to be added next season. The Valkyries. All right. The Valkyries there in Oakland and San Francisco. And they ended up hiring as their coach, Natalie Nicasi. I hope I'm saying that correctly. But this will be the new expansion team, like I said, starting in 2025. Marty, my question is, when was the last time the WNBA expanded? What year?
Oh, wow. That's a good question, Tony.
Wow.
No way.
Yeah.
I just literally threw out a random number. I seriously got it right.
Yeah. Or read the thing right here. The WNBA's first expansion franchise since 2008. The Valkyries will kick off play for the 2025 season, holding games in the Chase Center, located in San Francisco.
Yes, and it counts. How about that? Patrick Ewing from the baseline. Charles Oakley on the rebound. Yes.
Wow, I can't believe I got that right, Tony. That was a stone cold. I just kind of threw it out there. Wow.
You should be proud of yourself.
You know what? I am.
Make fun of take you out for dinner.
I know where she should take me.
We want to eat. Yes, we have the meat.
You're doggone tootin' right. You bet you better take me to Arby's. Honey, when you listen to this tomorrow, yeah, it's an Arby's night tonight. Actually, not tomorrow night. Maybe Saturday night, so I don't know. We'll see. Tony, did you happen to see who our Arby's winner of the week is this week?
I have not.
Former Duke University, I can't remember if he played center or forward. I think he's probably a center. Orlando Magic center, Wendell
Carter
Jr., 3 years, $59 million for Mr. Carter. What do you think of the signing?
You know, I think the Magic have a really good culture, and he has played a lot better for them. So I remember correctly, I think he was a Bull initially.
Yep.
And then they moved him when they got
Vucevic.
Shoot. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And so he seemed to be a really, really good fit there for Orlando. Hard worker on both ends, just good screens, good defender, rebounder, and active, and not a bad scorer as well. You'll see him, put up middle teams, I think, is where his average is. And so, yeah, he's a nice player.
Yeah, I really like, again, kind of a good piece for Orlando. A tradable contract if you need to. He led the team in rebounding last year, averaged 7 rebounds a game, averaged about 11 points and 7 rebounds a game as a center, and now only played in 55 games. But you know, I think I like the signing. I think it's a good signing. And if it doesn't work out, again, very, very tradable contract that they'll be able to use to add something else to their war chest, so to speak. So, I tell you what, Tony, if Mel Allen were Wendell Carter Jr.'s agent, he would say after he signed him.
How about that?
So let's jump into it here, Tony. We are taping this right now. It is, according to my computer, 4:58 on Thursday afternoon. The WNBA Finals will be tipping off in just a couple of hours. So by the time folks hear this, Game 1 will be in the books. I did a quick little 13 or 14-minute pod with my son Carter last night. His preview, he's about the biggest WNBA fan that I know. He really studies it and knows the teams inside and out. Just kind of some of your initial thoughts here, Tony, on the finals here and how we got here. The Liberty knocking off. We pretty well called it last week. I think we said Liberty and Aces will be done in four, and we saw the Sun and the Lynx going five. I thought game five would be more competitive than what it was, but Minnesota came out on fire and really playing really, really well on all cylinders, and Connecticut was just back on its heels from pretty much the opening tap. But it went five, and we accurately predicted that. So, what do you think, buddy?
Not to beep our own horn, but beep, beep on that. But you go through and you take a look at it. The Liberty, and the Aces might argue with me on this, but I think the Liberty from top to bottom is probably the most talented starting five in the WNBA. And where I think they separated from last year is they really got a much better bench. Yep. And so I think that's what propelled them to the league's best record, to eclipsing Vegas as the best team in the WNBA this season. But at the same time, you take a look, Minnesota beat them 3 out of 4.
Yep.
And so I don't know if Minnesota's the kryptonite, but Minnesota, it's interesting because this is not a group of stars. Like, Nafisa Collier
is
really good.
Yeah.
But she was the sixth pick in her draft. And I'm just like, wow, they thought there were five players better than her.
Yeah.
But I give her a ton of credit because at UConn, she was maybe 10, 15 foot on her range, and now she knocks down threes, and she basically turned herself into a guard. Yeah. And then you begin to take a look at the pieces they put around her. Again, you aren't just blown away by their talent. Bridget Carlton, who played at Iowa State, is a really good player. Kayla McBride made more threes, I think, than she's ever made in her career. But they've taken some cast off other teams. I think Courtney Williams, if I remember correctly, is one of their guards.
Yep.
Had a great game five against a former team she was on, Connecticut. They just really, really fit together. And, I'm not the biggest Cheryl Reeves apologist, but I think she's done one of, if not her best coaching job this season. But with that said, I think your Liberty are going to end up hosting the trophy at the end.
The Lynx, and it's a bit of an apples and orange comparison because you're talking men's college basketball to women's professional basketball, so bear with me with this, Tony. It's got a little of a Danny and the Miracles kind of a feel to it, to reference 1988, yes.
My peak, as I like to call it.
What?
My peak, as I like to call that time. There's a brief.
You and Thursday nights on NBC. Well, no, probably the 90s. I don't know. It's a debate. Maybe we'll have that debate some other time. But, Collier is just on fire. 27-10 in the playoffs here. And Courtney Williams is, played out of her mind two nights ago. Bridget Carlton, although she's kind of hit a little bit of a shooting slump, but, if you were to rank. Like if it was a schoolyard pick, Collier would be one or two, depending on if you picked her or Stewart. But three of the top four players in a schoolyard pick are going to be from the New York Liberty. But it's not like we almost learned in the Olympics when we almost lost to Serbia in the semifinal. It was Jokic and a bunch of dudes against all of this talent, and Serbia almost pulled it off. Now, they didn't. They didn't in the end, but they almost did, and they had us for three quarters there. And the big difference was Serbia just shot the heck out of it. And Minnesota, Collier could shoot the three. Williams can shoot the three. McBride can shoot the three. Bridget Carlton can definitely shoot the three. I mean, they're clicking really well at the right time, I guess is what I'm trying to say, Tony. And the sum might be better than the parts. I do agree with you that top to bottom, it's without a doubt that New York has the more talented roster top to bottom. But in a five-game series, the shorter the series, the shorter, you don't have to win four games. You just have to win three. And if you can sneak one out in New York in one of these first two, then you go back to Minnesota for a couple, and you never know what might happen, you know. But I think I'm going to agree with my son, Carter. I think if I were to give an official prediction, I would say New York in four. I could see New York kind of dominating game one, game two being a really, really games two and three being a really big dogfight between both teams. And they split those two. And then game four, New York's talent just kind of wins out. That's kind of my, if I were Nostradamus looking into the future, Tony, that would be my prediction.
Yeah, I don't see it going five. Yeah. It wouldn't be a huge surprise if it did. I just don't see it going five. And I don't think Minnesota's going to get swept. There's too much pride. They're too hard-nosed. So I think four is where I will fall as well.
Yeah. Let's move on to a little bit more news from the W. Basketball legend Teresa Witherspoon let go after one season by the Chicago Sky. And I don't know about you, Tony. I've done a little digging. I haven't seen a whole lot. It seems like she had the most of the players' support. Now there's a little bit here that I'm looking at right now. She was kind of thrown a, she did kind of leave Angel Reese in late in games to keep that double-double streak going, maybe a little bit of catering to certain players. I'm kind of reading a report here. She lost the locker room because of a culture that catered to the needs of a few players, poor late game calls, different things like that. So after 1 year, she was asked to move on here. Your thoughts, Tony, what do you think?
I was surprised by it. You know, with what you're saying, it makes sense. On some stuff, I thought actually Cardoso was the better pro prospect than Reese, but it seemed like she did kind of favor Reese and leave her in to keep that double-double thing going. And then Angel was one of, if not her biggest, her staunchest supporters when she was let go. Mm-hmm. But I think that in terms of things, it must have been fairly serious, because I don't know if you let somebody like her go after just a year, because she is, like you said, a WNBA legend. And then on top of that, she had a pretty successful run as an assistant coach in the NBA. Yep. And I don't know if she'll stay unemployed long, but there have been some moves coaching-wise at the end of the WNBA season that have been a little bit head-scratching. I was really surprised Kurt Miller was let go at LA as well. I thought, you know, if they happened to get the number one pick and he got Paige Becker, that they could almost do like an Indiana Fever type thing, yeah. With making the playoffs and stuff with that one missing piece. And then Tanisha Wright at Atlanta, had her roster at all, and they made the playoffs. Granted, it was as the eight, but still with the what she had to overcome, and she had put Atlanta in the playoffs, I think, three out of her 4 years or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so just surprised with how it seems like maybe some knee-jerk reactions.
Yeah. Another thing that I'm reading here, again, this is all just coming out here today, Tony. So, you know, kind of as Bill Simmons says, the reporters start emptying their notebooks after, you know, a few days after a firing or somebody moving on. Another thing that came out here was free agents were skeptical of joining the Sky because of her preferential treatment. On Wednesday, Pagliosa acknowledged the team had heard things, quote, along those lines. So, yeah, I mean, it, you know, probably just like with all of us, Tony, there's things that we wish we would have done differently. But you know, you got to treat the cardinal rule, one of the biggest cardinal rules. You've got to treat everybody the same, but you got to treat everybody a little bit differently. And I always erred on I don't care who you are. I don't care what you're doing. We're going to treat the number one player the same way we treat the 15th player and vice versa. And we're not going to give out a lot of preferential treatment. And be honest with you, a lot of the kids really, really appreciated it. Every once in a while, we'd have a couple of top-end players that didn't think the same way. And you know, if you have players, if your top-end players are thinking that they should be treated differently, guess what? You're not going to be very successful anyway. Because if they think that they're different, it's not going to work. It's just simply not going to work in a team dynamic, especially in a team dynamic where you're dependent on so much on chemistry and trust and different things. So it's one of those, don't you think, Ty? It's the art of coaching and knowing when to give a little extra love and when you got to toe the line and treat everybody the same. And it sounds like Weatherspoon kind of went too far in the wrong direction.
Yes, and that's probably what ended up Costner, because you know Chicago's had some issues with people wanting to go there anyway. I mean, I think back to struggling to think of her name, Elena Deladon left. Yep. You know, and different things that have happened there. Chicago has struggled with that, and then some of the things you saw with Chicago too. Some of the cheap shots and the fouls. You know, it just seemed like maybe a little bit of lack of discipline and structure and stuff. But, you know, again, easy for me to say, I wasn't there day to day, but I just, you know, we'll be interested to see how things end up for Coach Weatherspoon.
Yep. And I'm, you know, she's a big enough name. She's got enough of a reputation. She's going to get another shot somewhere. That's inevitable, don't you think?
Yeah, and it might be one of those other jobs we mentioned, whether it's L.A. or New York, or not New York, I'm sorry, L.A. or Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, could very well be. Absolutely. One NBA thing. Miami announced that they were going to name their court after Pat Riley. Seems appropriate to me, Tony. I think they say he's been there 30 years. That's hard to believe he's been there 30 years. I remember when he left New York and what a buzz that created. And 30 years later, he's still rolling. That's crazy.
That is nuts. Coach Riley, definitely on the Mount Rushmore of NBA coaches. And you take a look at what Miami's had going from Riley to, you know, Stan Van Gundy and Spoelstra. They've had some really, really good coaching legends, but none bigger than Coach Riley.
Yeah. And then the college game, the shortening of the transfer window from 45 days to 30 days. Tony, thumbs up, thumbs down.
Makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah. I mean, when you take a look at the whole NIL and the transfer stuff and things like that, it just, I don't know. I don't, you know, again, I'm not trying to be that old guy, get off my lawn type of thing. I think that the player should be compensated for their name, image, and likeness, but this whole transfer thing and holding people over a barrel, so to speak, you know, I just don't know the lessons that we're teaching are the right ones.
Yeah. I think it's just, yeah, I agree with you. I think the shortened transfer window is much better for the game. It's much better for the kids. It's much better for college sports in general. And even if it's 2 weeks less, it's a positive move forward, in my opinion. So, want to know more about a pen and a napkin and all the resources it offers? Go to apenandanapkin.com, a great resource for any coach at any level. In addition to our A Pen and a Napkin University video library options that are available to order, we have hundreds of pages of notes, from one-page handouts to book breakdowns to original coaching notes. We also have coaching links, a full catalog of every A Pen and a Napkin podcast, and ways to contribute to the growth of A Pen and a Napkin. APenandANapkin.com is a coaching resource that will help you become a better coach. All right, Tony, let's jump into our fifth NBA divisional preview here. The NBA Southwest, we've got New Orleans, Houston, Dallas, Memphis, San Antonio. My initial thought, Tony, was this might be our most competitive division from top to bottom. Most of our other divisions have had one or two, for lack of a better way of saying it, just turds at the bottom. I think these five teams, you could get into a situation, and again, the math will probably not work in this direction, but you can think of a scenario where the difference between the top team and the bottom team in this division probably will be the smallest of any division in the league this year, in my opinion. That's my thought. What do you think?
I would echo that. I think this one, from top to bottom, the five teams, this was the toughest one to pick. In all honesty, and I do say this in some seriousness here, it would not surprise me if any of the five ended up winning it. It's tough. I think you'll get my pick here in a second. I think they're a little bit better than the other four, but man, this has got some fluctuation to it. For example, you know, I'm not going to put New Orleans fifth, but if something were to happen to Zion, 100% would.
You could see a scenario where a team like New Orleans could finish fifth, or they could win the division. I mean, it's not that far-fetched that they could, yeah. And I think you could say the same thing about a couple of other teams as well. So
I don't know if there's ever been a division where you could say, I think all five of these teams could make the playoffs.
Yep.
And I think it could happen with this one. Not saying it will, but I believe it's possible, because I think, you know, a situation where, you know, depends upon how far Denver falls, and then you've got a whole lot of things in the Pacific with Golden State and Phoenix that are just, it's, I don't know, they could be either really good or they could be really poor.
Yeah.
And so I could see these five, if things go right for them health-wise and so on and so forth, I could see these five being playoff teams.
Yep. So is it your turn to go first, Tony?
I don't know if it is or not, but I'll do it anyway.
Okay, all right.
It's hard for me because I love Pop. I think Victor's going to take a big step. They put some adults around him, including Harrison Barnes. But I think there's still enough, I don't know, not depth, I think. I think their first five is really good. The bench concerns me. So I'm going to go San Antonio at five.
I concur in spades, my friend. And again, you know, who knows what Wimby will be able to do in year two. I forget the phrase that Brian Windhorst used, but, you know, I'm not going to put a ceiling on what Wembanyama might be able to do. But, you know, a veteran Chris Paul that's going to give him a solid 25 minutes every night. Harrison Barnes is an adult. Devin Vassell, you know, a nice shooting guard. And then you got Wembanyama, who is just going to get better as long as he stays healthy. I really like Stephen Castle. Shout out Briarcliff, his dad, Stacy Castle, Briarcliff grad. Zach Collins is a solid post player off the bench. Keldon Johnson, just a few years ago, he was on the national team, like in 2020 or in 2019 when Pop was in charge. So I there's some stuff to work with here, and depending on what direction they want to go. Now, I think they would be okay waiting one more year to really break out, maybe try to get one more crack at the lottery to see maybe if the ping pong balls could give them a little bit of love one more time. But I think San Antonio might be the one team that could not win the division, but second on down, depending on how the season goes, is not out of the realm of possibility. But you know, fifth, if I were to put your mortgage on it, Tony, and I were forced to do this, I would agree with you. I would put them fifth as well.
Yeah, and there's some pieces there. There really are. I mean, you didn't mention Jeremy Sochan. I think he's an interesting piece. I think Trey Jones is a really good backup point guard. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's just enough unknown that I would put him at five.
Yep.
And then who do you got fourth?
I got fourth. Man, this is where it got really tough. I mean, I just spun my wheels. I decided in a very, very close race, and I think it's just going to be really packed here, but I went with Houston.
Me too.
I like their depth. I think Reed Shepard, just every time you see him, you're just like, that dude's pretty good. You know, I really like Jabari Smith, Alperen Sengun. They got Steven Adams as a backup big, and wherever Steven Adams goes, Steven Adams wins. Jalen Green, gave them a glimpse of what he's capable of doing. Last spring, he had a really solid last 2 months of the season. You got a solid veteran like Fred VanVleet, Amen Thompson, Dylan Brooks. He's, you know, say what you want to about him. The dude is competitive as all get out, and he brings a definite toughness to your team. They've got a guy like Cam Whitmore, who a lot of people thought was going to be a lottery pick, and he can't crack their rotation right now. That's how much young talent they have, and they are primed for a 2-for-1 or 3-for-1 trade for some the next superstar that might be not happy with things, and that's kind of their next move probably is what we're looking at. So they got a great coach in Ime. But I just think they're a year away from taking that next step. That's my opinion, Tony. I had Houston 4.
Yeah, I go with them as 4 as well. I like Sanguine. I like Fred VanVleet a lot. The thing that I go back to would be, you know, we say from time to time, bad teams have leading scorers, mm-hmm. and not that Jalen Green was their leading scorer with Sanguine. But Jalen Green, until that last 2 months, I mean, there's a reason why they haven't offered him an extension.
Yep.
And then the other thing I would go with as far as culture as well, I know you mentioned Dylan Brooks, and Dylan's a nice basketball player. I would 100% agree with that. And he's competitive. I just don't know from a culture standpoint if this is going to be one of your building blocks. Jabari Smith is getting better, still not great, but I agree with you. I could see a package of like Jalen Green and Cam Whitmore and some of those young pieces like Amen Thompson or whatever, a 3-for-1 to get somebody that's disgruntled to go in there,
yep.
with Fred VanVleet, with Sanguin and some of those pieces, and they would be really strong.
Yeah.
But I agree. I think they're a year, maybe 2 away from doing some serious damage in the Western Conference.
Yeah, I can see, like, again, let's see what happens, but Dylan Brooks and 2 young guys for Kevin Durant, you know, don't aggregate me, but, you know, something like that, you know. So, I'm not a Dylan Brooks fan either. I respect him for his toughness and the way he goes out and defends, but he's also kind of a yahoo as well, too.
Yep.
So, who'd you have in 3rd, Tony?
I went with the Grizzlies. I think Jaw's going to have a big-time bounce-back year. Desmond Bane is a really, really good number 2. You know, you go through Jaren Jackson is one of, if not the best defensive player in the NBA. He'll definitely be on a first or a second team all-defense. I really like Marcus Smart in that team as well. There's going to be a toughness to him. And to be honest with you, as far as things go, Coach Jenkins, I don't know of many coaches that are more creative than him. I just think he's a really, really good coach. And so I have them, and I think Zach Edey, if I was putting money on it, I would put Zach Edey as the rookie of the year. I think I have that feeling.
Okay. I had the Grizzlies 2nd in the division. Yes, I had them 2nd. I was out on my daily walk, and the Grizzlies set a record for games missed in an NBA season last year. I think the number, and correct me if I'm wrong, somebody, you can aggregate me on this. I think it was 578 player games missed last year.
Seems like a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a record or something. I think, like you said, it sounds like Ja is in a much better place mentally. He missed all but 9 games. Marcus Smart missed a ton of time. I think Zach Edey does have a chance to be Rookie of the Year. You know, what's the formula for Rookie of the Year? Good stats on a good team. Unless you're a generational talent like a Wembanyama, where you're like, okay, this team sucks, but he's unbelievable, you know, type of a thing. Just great depth. Luke Kennard, just Brandon Clark. And I like this team. Like you said, Taylor Jenkins, I think he's a really, really good coach. And whenever Jaw has been healthy, they have been a 50-win team. Good. And when he has not been healthy, they haven't been really good. I mean, sometimes it's just that simple, but I just think if they stay healthy, I think they're the second best team in the division. And I actually toyed with having them win the division. I'll be honest with you, Tony. I toyed with it. I couldn't quite pull the trigger on that, but I would not be surprised to see them do it. So in third, I had New Orleans. And I had two big things about New Orleans. I really like a lot of the things that they are doing, positions 1, 2, 3, and 4. But, you know, they are really, really missing a center right now. You know, Daniel Tice is 6'8". Right now on ESPN.com, they've got Herb Jones playing center for them. That's probably not going to work against Embiid and Jokic and those type of folks. So I think the guy that they really want to deal, and this was the difference between New Orleans and Memphis, I think Memphis's team is a little bit more set right now. Now, again, with this shuffle of teams that we have, if they make the right deal, and I think the guy that's the odd man out is Brandon Ingram. I don't think there's any secret with that. If they trade Brandon Ingram for a center that fits what they have, they can move up to second or even win the division. But you know, I said they could finish last, they could finish first. I guess I settled for them right in the middle and I put them in third. I like Jonte Murray. Zion was as healthy as he's ever been last year. Hopefully he's kind of turned the corner. From the podcast that I've listened to, everybody's saying he looks tremendous right now. Trey Murphy the third, Jordan Hawkins, deadeye shooters to go around with these guys. Herb Jones, great defensive player. So it's a razor thin margin here, but I did take Memphis probably by a game or two over New Orleans. Again, because I think Memphis is going to be a lot healthier, and I think New Orleans, they need to find out what they're going to do with Brandon Ingram and what they're going to do about the center position.
If they had ended up getting Zach Edey in the draft, they being New Orleans, that would probably have sealed Rookie of the Year for him, because yep, he would get a ton of minutes with them. I don't know how many he will get in Memphis, but I'm assuming just from what it looks like in some of the preseason stuff, it looks like him and Ja have some good chemistry. The reason why I'm going with New Orleans in second is the following two reasons. Number one, you touched on Zion and how he looks from an in-shape standpoint, health standpoint. He's due to be healthy. Yep. And, you know, he's had a lot of setbacks, and I think this is the year he's due to be healthy. I hope that he's put some of this off-the-court stuff behind him, and he's ready to take that step and fall in love with basketball and meet the vast potential that he has. And the other one is Jonte Murray. That pickup, I think, was huge. I really think Atlanta will regret dealing him and keeping Trey. And I think as he goes there, that will be evident. And then, like you said, it is like a donut. They don't have a whole lot in the middle. So it'll be interesting to see what they can do with that. But as the NBA continues to evolve and progress, whatever you want to describe it, and go small ball, Herb Jones, you know, he only weighs a little over 200 pounds. There's no way he can guard the Jokic's and the Embiid's and Daniel Tice. Those games will have to step up and play. But I do like the dead-eye shooters they have, including Jordan Hawkins. And one guy that you didn't mention, and he's getting a little long in the tooth, but I think he's still a very, very big piece, would be C.J. McCollum.
C.J. McCollum, yep. So you have Dallas at one, Tony?
I do. Yeah, I do.
As do I.
You know, and with them, you know, it's not a perfect roster, but the reason why I went with Dallas is the pickup of Klay. Because if you go back to the NBA Finals, one of the things that really shot Dallas in the foot was the lack of outside shooting. And I think Klay provides that. And then the other thing, too, is you're not just getting Klay, you're getting a motivated Klay. Mm-hmm. Because things obviously did not go well the last year in Golden State. And I think he's really going to come out and have a strong year. And then Derek Lively going to be in year two. You know, some of the pickups they had at the trade deadline last year will have a preseason to get more and more acclimated with the team. But I would put them as about the third, fourth best team out West, but the best team in the Southwest.
Yeah. I think Dallas might have caught lightning in a bottle last spring.
Yes.
Last spring and summer. I think they're at best as good as they were last year. I think losing like a Derek Jones Jr. I know Clay is Clay, and like you said, he's motivated, he's ready to go. But you know, Derek Jones Jr. gave them a lot defensively, and Clay, Luka, and Kyrie are not, you know, especially, you know, Clay in his prime was a good defender, but he's not anymore, and that's okay. He tore an ACL and he tore his Achilles. He shouldn't be as good a defender as he once was. It was hard to pick against Luka. He's just amazing. He just is able to, you know, he's just like a surgeon out there, and he carves it up. But if they finish third, Tony, I wouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't be shocked at all if Memphis were to leapfrog them. Like I said, if New Orleans makes the next a great deal with Ingram, I wouldn't be shocked to see that. Now, I don't think they're going to fall down to Houston and San Antonio, but if Dallas finished third in this division, wouldn't shock me in the least. I think some things fell right. I Kyrie was on his best behavior, and I hope he continues to be on his best behavior, because when he's right, he's a lot of fun to watch. But I really worry about their perimeter athleticism and their perimeter defense, and you know, but Luka's awesome. He's unbelievable on the offensive end, and he's due to win an MVP here in the next couple of years. I really think he's going to be at that level. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and him and Luka and Kyrie together might be the best duo in the NBA.
Yeah.
But it would not surprise me if they kind of play the long game, give away some regular season games to make sure they're a little bit more fresh for the playoffs.
Yep. Episode number 104, drills to start practice. A lot of really, really good stuff. We gave you a ton of ideas here. And if you, if you need to get out, reach out to Tony or I, we are there to help you out. A lot of really, really good stuff. Tony, try to stay cool in the cedar, my friend.
We will. It's supposed to be mid-80s tomorrow. So, we'll see what happens. I might have to go out to the pool. I got the day off tomorrow. So,
oh,
yeah.
Nice.
We'll sunbathe and we'll see.
Put on the Speedo and let it rip?
I don't want to gross anybody out. So, just regular swim trunks.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Hope you folks have enjoyed it. A lot of really good stuff. Again, thanks to Ruiz Auto and All American Used Cars and Trucks for their love and their sponsorship. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day